We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brent Aiken. And on tonight's episode, a slight change of plans. I know last week I said I would be reviewing a Halloween creepy, scary horror movie. But I didn't see it, so I'm gonna go see it next week. I'm gonna push the review for that movie to next week. And also, I may review. It may be a double review, so I may be reviewing another movie along with the horror movie that I had planned for this week. But this week, tonight's episode will be a review of the new of Disney's newest animated series, The Ghost and Molly McGee. I figured, well, since I had finished what has been released of the show so far, and because it was kind of a comedy, horror, supernatural, spooky type show, you know, and it premiered this month, you know, I figured, oh, it was perfect. I mean, it fit perfectly for the time of month it is. And it was the first thing that I thought of. If you haven't seen it yet, The Ghost and Molly McGee is, and there will be minor spoilers. Not much happens. I mean, there's only been 5 episodes, 10 if you count each individual 11-minute episode as one episode, so technically 10 11-minute episodes, but, you know, and so, I mean, there isn't really much, like, of an overarching story so far, because the show is still new. From the looks of it, it doesn't look like it's going to be, it might not be a story-driven show. It may just be episodic, but who knows? Only time will tell. But if you still care about what happens in the episodes and you don't want anything spoiled for you, come back and listen to this after you've watched what's out, the episodes that are out now. So The Ghost of Molly McGee is Disney Channel's newest animated series, and it's a musical, it's a comedy horror, it's supernatural, and it is basically about this ghost living in this town. Well, I mean, there's this ghost world that he lives in, but when he lives on Earth, he lives in this abandoned house in this depressing-ass town of Brighton. And the name is kind of ironic considering, like I said, everyone's so gloom and doom in the town, but his name's Scratch and he just lives in the attic of this creepy abandoned house. But one day this family moves in, the McGees, and, in a desperate attempt to try to get them to leave, he ends up cursing, the daughter of the family, Molly McGee, and basically saying, "Hey, we will be bound together forever." And he does this in an attempt to get her to leave. Cause he's like, "Oh, she'll be scared, by me because I'm a ghost, you know, I'm really scary." But he didn't take into account that Molly is a fan of the weird horror and supernatural entities and shit like that. So Molly is thrilled because she's like, "Hey, I have a best friend for all eternity now." And Scratch then realizes, "Oh shit, I messed up. He flat out says, "I didn't curse Molly McGee. She cursed me." And that's basically the first episode, because we start out with him, going in front of this, council of ghosts. And then there's like this head ghost that's kind of like, I think they said his name, but he's basically, he's like the Grim Reaper. He's like Death, and he's like 50 feet tall, and the other ghosts in the council are like 2 feet tall. They're small ghosts, but it starts out with him giving them his annual scare report, and they're like, "Oh, okay, you did adequate, Scratch, whatever." Like in his world, in the ghost world, he's pretty much just a screw up, but he sucks. Like everyone despises him, or everyone just barely tolerates him, but pretty much everyone thinks he's a loser in the town. They all just, every time he's around, they're like, "Oh, this guy again," you know? So, And in a way, Molly can relate too, because she just moved in to the town. So she, not that everyone despises her, but it's that she doesn't have many friends like Scratch, you know. So, and that's also another reason Molly becomes so attached to Scratch too, is because she's like, hey, I made my first real friend in this town, and it only took like half of the day we were here, you know. And of course, she ends up making some friends in the next couple of episodes, who are pretty funny, by the way. They have some funny lines, and they're good characters, what we've seen of them so far. But yeah, so that's the basic plot. And yeah, throughout the remaining eight episodes, or nine episodes, I should say, basically the plots are just, you know, just anything can happen. I mean, not anything can happen, but like... one of the episodes, they end up, Molly ends up trying to get, she's doing this, project for her history class, and she's doing it on Abraham Lincoln. And Scratch is like, oh, well, I know Abraham Lincoln. You know, he's a good friend of mine. He's just bullshitting her, you know, he's just lying to her. And Molly's like, oh, okay, cool. Can you get him for me? And of course, Scratch is like, yeah, I'll get him. And, I mean, he ends up getting him, but it's after he reveals that he lied to Molly, about knowing who Abraham Lincoln is and posing one of the ghosts who follows him, Jeff, who claims he's Scratch's friend, but Scratch hates him too. So he ends up getting this dumbass ghost, Jeff, that always hangs around him and irritates him. He poses him as Abraham Lincoln. And then when Scratch reveals that he lied to Molly and that's not and that Jeff wasn't Abraham, he ends up getting the real Abraham Lincoln and saving her project. Another episode is Scratch helping Molly cheat so her softball team can win the can keep winning their games. And then, you know, she ends up not using Scratch's help at the end and still winning. And, yeah, it's just, you know, just random plots like that. One episode, they're trying to fix up the, band shell. There's this, concert arena, this small concert arena that was torn down, back in the old days, or, you know, a few decades ago before Molly and them even showed up. And Molly wants to bring the town back to life, you know, like kind of get people excited about, you know, about being a what was it called? A Brightonian. Yeah, that's what she calls the citizens of Brighton. And, yeah, and then she builds it, and then they end up getting... She wants to get this country rock star, Kenny... What was his name? Kenny something. But she wants to get this country rock star, and then she ends up not being able to contact him, so Scratch just hijacks a bus that has this... K-pop girl band in it called Atomic Pink that just so happens to be Molly's younger brother's favorite band. And even though the crowd was expecting Kenny, they ended up liking Blackpink and everything went well. but yeah, so you know, what we've seen so far, you know, the episodes are pretty much episodic. I mean, they're not... so far, it doesn't seem to be story-driven. And as I've mentioned in my reviews, in my episodes talking about the Owl House, the one I did on Amphibia, the one I did on DuckTales, I mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. It seems that pretty much every animated Disney show has done this, especially following the success of Gravity Falls. And it's not really a formula, but it's like... It's a way of storytelling that works. You know, like you spend the first season or half of the first season or most or pretty much all of the first season except the season finale, having just kind of episodic adventures. You know, you have one episode sets up the basic plot of the show, and then the first season's pretty much just, you know, you get the audience getting to know the world and the characters interacting with each other and just, you know, having going through day-to-day adventures, you know. And then, you know, usually the season one finale is where shit hits the fan and everything goes crazy. And you know, the overarching plot kind of kicks in. And then season two is where, that's where it kicks in, you know, officially. And then it becomes more, you know, each episode becomes more story driven and more plot heavy, you know, instead of just being, oh, you could, I could miss one episode and I'd be fine, you know. But yeah, so it may, and again, because they've only, the show premiered the first of this month, and they haven't even, they haven't released all of the episodes on TV yet, but they did release the first five, or again, 10, if you count each 11-minute segment as, you know, one segment. So instead of five, it'd be 10. But yeah, but they released the first 5/10 on Disney Plus on the 6th, and I just watched the show a couple days ago, so... but from what I've seen, it may be setting up, because that we don't know much about the Grim Reaper, like the head of the, well, he's not called the Grim Reaper, but he's this Grim Reaper looking figure, this character. And he looks like he's going to be probably the main antagonist of the series. So, I mean, I could be wrong, but the way the first episode ended with, we cut back to the, after Scratch and Molly, you know, become, he reluctantly becomes friends with Molly and befriends her family too. You know, they end up just, it cuts back to the ghost world Scratch is from. And, we cut back to the council isn't there, but the Grim Reaper figure, the head of the council, is sitting at his desk. And there's this little dial that has the name, the town's name, Brighton, on it. And the dial moves ever so slightly to the right, indicating that the town is, has gone from totally depressed and, you know, boring and scared to just a little bit happier. You know, so the dial moves just like half an inch. And then it zooms out and, or it pans out and we see the Grim Reaper, or we, the head of the council, look down ominously like, huh, that's weird. You know, like that shouldn't have happened, you know. So I feel like that, because, you know, I feel like that's foreshadowing that he might be the main antagonist of the show, either later in this season, like the second half of the season, or, you know, the season finale, or starting with season two. And they've already greenlit the show for a second season. Like, they greenlit it, like, a month, apparently the 31st of August, so of this August, so, which, you know, going off on a little tangent here, I don't care, it's not really that big of a deal when networks do this, when they greenlight, or streaming services, whenever they greenlight a show and then have a second season, but in a way, I feel like they should wait until at least half of the season is aired, or for streaming services, you know, when they release them all at once, at least wait a couple weeks, you know, for people to have watched it and for them to get feedback on it, you know. Yeah, but if it's a streaming service, do that. But if it's a show that's airing weekly, well, some of the, yeah, the Disney Plus shows do that weekly. So, okay, some streaming services do it weekly. But whether it's, you know, release half the season at once, all of it at once, or each episode weekly, I feel like streaming services and networks should wait until they get enough critical feedback and audience, you know, to see what the critical and audience consensus is before they greenlight a second season. Because the show could suck, you know, for the first season, and then it's like, oh, well, shit, we already greenlit a second season. Do we just make it even though most of our audience is, probably isn't still watching, you know? And you know, that's just the... I don't know. I guess it's just depends on how much faith they have in the show. They're like, well, we like it so much, and we did a test screening for the audience. They liked it. What we've shown to people, they've liked it. So we're confident. We're fully confident in giving this a second season. and I guess that's fine. It's just, you know, sometimes I feel like it'd be better to wait and see if the show will be good before. Excuse me. You know, just automatically greenlighting a second season for the show. They did that with Star versus the Forces of Evil too. When that premiered back in 2015, they greenlit a second season. After the first episode aired. So and granted, that wasn't a couple months before the show premiered. You know, but still, that's in a way a little too early too. Like, because it's just the pilot. You know, but. But anyway, I don't know. It's just something interesting to think about. I don't know. But, you know, that being said, I like the show. So in a way, I'm glad personally that it got a second season, and hopefully the rest of this season, whenever it premieres, is good. And because, like I said, the other Disney cartoons have gotten more story heavy or more plot story driven and plot heavy as the series progressed, I kind of hope the same for this show, because that would be really cool. I'd like to see what kind of overarching story they could tell, what villain they could have, or what villains they could have, what could happen, you know. But then again, if it stays episodic, it's fine. I mean, because, you know, I mean, not all cartoons have to have an overarching story. I mean, a lot do, and then there are a lot that don't, you know. But if it doesn't, it's fine. But yes, oh, and the animation in the show, since it's animated, I'd like to say I think it's really great. It's a little more, I don't know how to explain it. The animation to me, it doesn't remind me of a specific show necessarily, but it reminds me of, it feels like a show Disney would have released in the early 2000s. Like it feels like one of those. I mean, an animated show, not just any show, but it feels like a cartoon they would have released in the early 2000s, you know, like along with Kim Possible and American Dragon, Jake Long, which I haven't seen those in its entirety, but, you know, I mean, just to throw a few examples out, Lilo and Stitch, you know, it's crazy. Like, it's weird. The animation has its own unique style, but the look and feel of it and the kind of charm that the show has, it feels like something that would have aired on Disney Channel in the early 2000s. So I don't know. I like it. And like I said, it does have a certain charm to it. And the humor is really good too. It's really funny. I love too, the personalities of Molly and Scratch, because Scratch is this more cynical, you know, just fed up with everyone's bullshit, done with life. Kind of an asshole. And then Molly is this like really sweet, caring individual who, you know, is willing to befriend anyone, you know, just like that. And just sees the good, tries to see the good in everything. Always tries to find a silver lining in a bad situation. I like those character types. So I love that even though they're friends, they don't have the same personality. Like, because usually whenever there's a duo in a cartoon, and sometimes a trio, but more than often in a cartoon, when there's a duo, the duo pretty much have the exact same personality, or they do the exact same things. And you know, it gets a little, you know, not repetitive, but it just gets a little much sometimes. You know, it's good to have a balance. You know, it's good to have, yeah, it's just good to have a balance between the two main characters. Like, just having both of them do the same things and act the same way, it just kind of gets boring after a while. So, but like I said, I do like those two character types. So it's fun, despite the fact that they're friends, it's fun to watch their personalities play off of each other. They play off of each other really well. And, excuse me. And, yeah, like I said, the animation's solid. It's very fluid, very colorful, and, you know, very, very unique. It stands out very well. And I love the voice acting, too, in the show. Molly is voiced by Ashley Birch, who, let's see, what has she been in? Her name sounds like, or her voice sounds familiar. I feel like I should have seen her in something. She was in Final Space. I watched the first two seasons of that, but I don't remember Ash Graven. I don't remember which character she played. Anyway, the voice sounds familiar. I probably have heard it on something and I just don't remember, but she does a great job at voicing Molly. And her personality, going back to some of the other Disney animated shows, her personality, like when she first popped up on screen, I was like within the first minute, I'm like, yep, I love this character. She's great. but she's just got this very vibrant, energetic, kind personality. And, she's like a mixture. If you took Mabel from Gravity Falls, Luce from the Owl House and Marcy from Amphibia, and you rolled them into one, you'd get Molly. Like she has the affinity for she's got like the kindness of Mabel, the nerdiness, the nerdy geeky qualities of Marcy, and the affinity for the weird horror creepy shit that Luce does. And and I don't know, it's just I like she doesn't feel like a carbon copy of all those three. She just feels like a natural blend of those three, and while still feeling like her own character, you know. But she's a great character. And Ashley Birch does a great job at voicing her. And also something about her family I thought was interesting was her design, like her skin color and everything about her. I thought she might be Asian, and she was, and they revealed she was Thai within like the first couple episodes. And I thought that was kind of neat because I think I mentioned this in my review of Amphibia, but Anne from the main character in Amphibia, she's Thai or Thai American. So I thought that was kind of neat that it's like, wow, there's two Disney animated shows going on at the same time where the main character is a Thai teenage girl. I'm like, huh, that's an interesting that's an interesting coincidence right there. And she's like half Scottish, half Thai. So I thought that was interesting. Like her father's Scottish, her part Scottish, Scottish American, and then her mother's Thai. So her and her brother are kind of a mix between Scottish and Thai. So I thought that was kind of neat. And her parents are great too. Sharon and Pete, they're both great. Their voice actors, Sumali, I'm probably butchering that, I'm sorry. Sumali Montano, who voices Sharon, she's great. And Jordan Klepper, who voices her father Pete, they do a great job. And they're not the typical, dumb husband, overbearing wife, parent couple, a parent group, or, you know, set of parents that you see. It's, you know, countless times throughout sitcoms and shows, whether they're live action or animated, you know, and it's always refreshing to see that they're just normal people. I mean, you know, like they're not defined to a specific cliche. They're just parents trying to make ends meet and do their best, who love each other and maybe get into an argument every now and then, but not to the point where it seems like, why did these two marry each other? You know, but yeah, I mean, I like that aspect. And they seem to have a good relationship. Like I like the two of them as a couple, and I like the two of them individually as characters. They're, from what we've seen, they've had some pretty good lines, especially in one episode. Well, it's not really a line per se, but it's, Pete and, his son Daryl. They're trying to, get, this vault that's in their basement open because they're trying to make some money to fix the car. And they think, oh, there might be money in this vault because we've never been able to open it. And we didn't even know if it was here until just now. And they keep trying to open it. And then every so often there's the basement is like infested with centipedes. And every so often a centipede will crawl up on Pete and he'll just like scream kind of a feminine scream and like run around or like push Daryl in front of him. And I don't know. It's just, I always kind of like that. Like it's silly, but I always kind of, I like that joke where like the guy like pretends to be masculine and everything and not afraid. And then he like either screams like a girl or runs away from something kind of small. And although to be fair, I mean, people have phobias of bugs. So, I mean, it's not like that's not like it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, you know, it's, I always find that joke funny in shows. But yeah, they do a good job. Daryl, I forgot to say who voiced Scratch. I'll get to Scratch in a minute. Daryl, Molly's younger brother, is voiced by, and I know I'm going to butcher this too. So if any of you know how to pronounce her name, and if I am pronouncing it wrong, I apologize. Michaela, I think I'm butchering that. It's like, okay, Michaela Dietz. Okay. I know I'm messing that up. I think, but anyway, but she voices Daryl, and she was Amethyst on Steven Universe, which was a Cartoon Network show. And I didn't even know it was her the first time I heard Daryl speak. I mean, I recognized the voice. I was like, where have I heard that voice before? And then when I looked it up and when I Googled it and found out it was her, I'm like, oh shit, that's Amethyst's voice actress. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I just think she does a really good job, in the same way that like, Nancy Cartwright, who voices Bart on The Simpsons, in the same way that she kind of lowers her pitch in her voice to sound a little bit more masculine in a way. A little bit, because, you know, Bart's only 10 years old. He's not a fully grown adult. But, you know, in the same way, she kind of lowers her register to sound more like a boy. Michaela Dietz does that with Daryl. And she sounds really good, too. Like, she sounds, you know, just like a boy. And I think that's cool because, it's just kind of neat because it's like, and this is going off on a little tangent, but back last year when people were upset that Hank Azaria voiced Apu, you know, from The Simpsons, the Indian guy who runs the Quickie Mart, you know, and people were upset that Mike Henry, a white guy, was voicing Cleveland, a black character on Family Guy, you know, and Peter's neighbor, you know, people were petitioning to get the voice actors, get someone who was actually Indian and black to voice them. And I mean, I don't. Okay, here's my opinion on this, and then I'm going to go back to the review. But because I was talking about a woman voicing a boy, I feel like this is my hot take on this issue. I feel like, and I don't know. I know they went through. I'm pretty sure they went through with changing Cleveland's voice actor. So now it's someone else, a YouTuber who does Family Guy impressions. He's voicing Cleveland now. I don't know if Hank Azaria is still voicing Apu or not. I'll have to look that up. But to me, if a voice actor fits the voice of the character, it shouldn't matter what gender or race they are or what accent they have or anything like that. Like if they have the voice that the creator of the show or animated movie or video game or whatever it is, if they have the right voice for the character, then none of those other qualities about who they are and what makes them who they are, what makes them, you know, that shouldn't matter. It should just be, oh, your voice, you have a good voice that matches the essence of this character perfectly, you're hired. A perfect example, even though this isn't animated, the Star Wars movies. Because in the original trilogy, I forgot who played Darth Vader when Luke took off his helmet, but it was a white guy. But the guy who voices Darth Vader is James Earl Jones, a black guy. You know, who's you know, been in a lot of shit. He was Mufasa in The Lion King. That's just two examples. But, you know, he's been in a bunch of stuff. But, you know, even though he was a black guy and Anakin, a.k.a. Darth Vader, was white, you know, like Hayden Christensen played him in the prequel trilogy. And then another guy played him in the, you know, the last few minutes of the or towards the end of the episode 6 when Luke takes off his helmet. I mean, not his helmet, but Darth Vader's helmet. You know, it's a white guy portraying him, but voicing him, you know, bringing him to life, you know, via voice acting was James Earl Jones. And no one cared. No one cared, and I haven't seen all of Samurai Jack. I've seen a few episodes, but no one cared when Phil LaMarr, a black guy, was voicing an Asian character. You know, Samurai Jack's, I believe, Japanese because he's samurai. But yeah, he's an Asian character. Being voiced by a black guy. No one cared then about that. No one cared about James Earl Jones voicing Darth Vader, you know, even though a white guy physically portrayed him. So I don't know. I just, and no one cares that Nancy Cartwright is the voice of Bart, No one cares about Michaela Dietz voicing Daryl. So I don't know. I don't know why. To me, it shouldn't matter, because if the voice fits, then it fits, you know? And I mean, and if you want to make another character and have a specific gender or race or a specific person with a specific accent or whatever you're looking for, voice that character, then that's fine. But like, to take away the voice actor who's voiced that character and brought them to life for so many years is just stupid, especially when their voice fits so well, you know? But anyway, that was just my little tangent on that whole incident that happened last year. And, you know, I figured it tied in perfectly with this because, you know, like I said, she voices Daryl, and I think she does a fantastic job. But anyway, so, yeah, back to the show. Yeah, everyone who voices the characters are great. And there's been some guest stars, too. Patton Oswalt voiced one of the, I think, the mayor of the town. He was on the city council, at least, but he was on an episode. Kelsey Grammer voiced dead Abraham Lincoln, the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. And he did a great job. Molly's friend Libby is voiced by Laura Jill Miller, she is the voice actress for Lisa on The Loud House. And there's a bunch of other voice actors and actresses too. Gray Griffin, formerly Gray Delisle, you know, she's in there. John DiMaggio's in there. Greg Baldwin, Kerry Walgren, you know, a bunch of voice actors and actresses you'd hear in, you've probably heard in literally any animated show. It just, you know, because a lot of the voice actors and actresses are in several different shows spanning several different networks and everything. You just might not know it's them because, you know, they usually put on a different voice, or, you know, if they don't, they're a different character. So it's like, you wouldn't really be paying attention anyway to that. But yeah, so everyone does a great job. And also, yeah, going back to, cause I forgot to mention Scratch. He is voiced by Dana Snyder, who I immediately recognized him when I heard him. If you don't know who he is, he's a great voice actor. He voiced, Master Shake on Aqua Teen Hunger Force. He voiced, or I guess is voicing, because that show's not over. He's voicing Granny on Squidbillies. He was the voice of Gazpacho on Chowder. He's probably been on some other stuff, but those are the three main, especially Master Shake and Gazpacho. Those are the those two and Granny are the three main ones that I think of, but mostly Shake and Gazpacho. But he does a great job as Scratch. And even though he's not putting on a new voice, like it's still just him, he's still, I mean, you know, because with voice acting, it's not like you always have to put on a unique, cartoony, deep, interesting voice. You know, it's just like sometimes you can just use your natural voice just as long as you act. Like that's the other part of it's called voice acting. You know, I mean, if you just speak into the microphone, that's that's different from voice acting, you know. Because you can say your lines any way you want, but I mean, if you're not acting it, you know, if you're just speaking your lines, you know, you're just going to come across as like you're phoning it in. You know, you still got to, even if you're just using your normal voice, you got to kind of put some emotion into it. You got to put some more effort into it than just speaking into a microphone, just blandly saying the whatever lines are in front of you, you know. But and he does that. I mean, he's done that with all of his characters, even if they've sounded all the same, except Granny, because she's an elderly woman, so his voice is a little different when he voices her. But yeah, he does a great job. And also, I love the going back to the, well, I talked about the animation, but I love that it's like more of a dark cartoon, and I love whenever Scratch is like haunting someone or trying to scare someone. I love that the backgrounds of whatever scene they're in are always like turn into like this weird kaleidoscope of melting. It's like a melting neon colors, and you know the lighting gets all bright and dark. It's neon pretty much, and Scratch turns into this giant huge abomination of himself with long claw hands, and he's like dripping, and you know, he looks, I mean, not scary, but he looks, it's like a cool, creepy ish design. And it's pretty cool too. And I love the humor in the show. Like, not only you know, between the, you know, interactions of the characters and everything, but it is lighthearted in some aspects, but it does have its fair share of dark humor, and specifically whenever Scratch is involved. But there's this one episode where they're in the woods, and I think it was Scratch. He like throws something at a bird, and it ends up killing the bird, and his soul leaves his body. His ghost goes to the ghost world. And there's another one. I guess this is probably the better example. But there's this one where they're building the concert stadium, or the concert stage. There's this old guy that's hammering a nail into a piece of wood. He dies, falls over on the table. His ghost is leaving his body, and Scratch is like, "No, you get back in there." And he pushes his ghost back in and brings him back to life. And I always like when shows, especially animated shows, aimed maybe a little bit more towards a family audience or kids, you know, depending on the target audience, you know. But I love whenever animated shows that aren't aimed specifically at adults, I love whenever they get dark. Like, I love dark humor. I mean, done well, you know, and this show does it pretty well whenever it pops up. And so I mean, the show has been good so far. Like I said, each episode's been great. The Curse, you know, that was the pilot, that was a great episode. And Howling Harriet, The Unnatural, getting the band show back together, that was the episode where they were rebuilding the concert arena. Hooray for Mollywood, where Molly, Daryl, and Molly's friend Libby try to make a horror movie with along with Scratch. That was great. They've all been great so far. They've all been pretty funny. And I can't wait for the next episode. If you haven't seen the show, there's also some folks I forgot to mention. There's this one scene in one of the episodes where it's the best of Nin tensions, where Molly's grandmother Nin comes to visit, and she brains a Thai fruit called a durian, and it apparently, which I've never seen one or been around one, but apparently it smells like rotten egg, and it's a 50-50 thing where, like, some people love it, some people absolutely despise it because of the smell and taste. And I just thought it was funny because when I watched that, I'm like, oh shit, that's weird. Or that's a funny coincidence, because 2 weeks ago, the season premiere of Amphibia, had a durian in it. Like, Anne and the Planters and Anne's parents went to the supermarket, and Hop Pop opened up a durian and he, you know, almost passed out on the floor. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And again, another coincidence. It's like another, you know, not only do both the shows have a Thai American tween age girl, you know, but they also both referenced, you know, they also both, you know, specifically mentioned a durian, you know, a Thai fruit. And I just happened to watch both episodes, you know, like not too far apart from each other. I just thought it was a funny coincidence. I thought I'd brain up. To conclude, to kind of wrap things up, the show so far has been good. Like I said, I love the humor, both it's lighthearted and it's dark humor. The animation's great, very colorful, very vibrant, and cartoony. And it's cartoony, it's cartoony for the humans too, but it's but when Scratch is around, it gets a little bit more cartoony because he's a ghost. He can stretch and morph and turn into whatever he wants. So it's, you know, whenever Scratch is involved, it gets a little bit more loony, you know, a little bit more wacky, I guess. But the animation's fluid, solid, colorful. The voice acting's great. The characters are great. They interact well off each other. The stories so far have been interesting for each episode. Didn't get bored. I love the musical numbers they do. throughout each episode. Each episode has at least one little musical number montage, you know. And it kind of reminds me of Phineas and Ferb, honestly, because pretty much every episode, especially after the, what was that one? The Bow Chicka Bow Wow episode. Well, anyway, it was that one where Phineas and Ferb became a one-hit wonder, and they sung this song, Bow Chicka Bow Wow, I Want My Baby Back or something. And which was a great song, but ever since that episode, the creators had a, you know, wanted to put a song in each episode, and they did, and that you know, the show having a song in each episode kind of made me feel nostalgic, you know, reminded me of Phineas and Ferb, and so it gets points for that too. So everything about the show so far has been great. And it looks like Disney has another good cartoon on their hands, which is good considering that the Owl House and Amphibia are both in their final seasons and they're expected to end sometime next year. Well, technically, the Owl House has one more season left, but it's 3 45-minute specials, which, let's be honest, at that point, just call it a movie. I mean, 3 45-minute episodes, that's like 2.5 hours. They should have just made a movie. Like, at that point, why even call it a season, you know? But anyway, but since they're both ending, you know, sometime next year, you know, soon, it'll be, you know, it's nice to see a new show pop up in there, you know, among the shows that are out now. And I hope it continues for a long time, and I kind of hope it becomes a little bit more story-driven and everything. And yeah, it was a perfect time for it to come out in October, considering it's a comedy horror and it, you know, the spooky month, Halloween's right around the corner. So, good time for it to come out. And, yeah, I think you should check it out if you haven't seen it. If you want, it airs on Disney Channel, but, they released, like I said, the first 5/10 episodes, on Disney Plus. They've been out for since the 6th. So, if you want to watch it there, you can watch it there too. But yeah, so, and yeah, the creators, Bill Motz and Bob Roth, I think you guys created a good show. But yeah, so, and hopefully you guys like the show. But yeah, I guess that does it for tonight's episode. And again, next week will be the movie review, probably a double movie review. And there may also be a series review in the middle of the week. Maybe. If there's not, you can count on at least the double movie review next Friday. But with that being said, I hope you guys have a great weekend. And I will see you next week. Take care.